Hello and welcome to the first Albion Roar of the Decade here on Radio Reverb, Mighty 7.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Spotify and, well, on everything really. I'm AD Packham and we are head over heels thanks to OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's a new year and it would seem it's the year of the Razor, the Ali Razor that is, with Ali Jahan back in the team and finally breaking his scoring duck in the last game of 2019. He found himself Jahan Bash on the score sheet for the first game of 2020,
which was surely
the goal of the decade. Brilliant. So today we take a break from league action as we welcome Sheffield Wednesday to the Amex in the FA Cup. There is a question of how seriously we should take the cup this year, but we'd all like another trip to Wembley, wouldn't we?
No.
Joining me today as we look... Shut up, you two. Joining me today as we look back on the week and maybe get caught up in a little bit of cup fever is, of course, Alan Wares.
Hello, right here.
And we welcome back Ali J's biggest fan, Marcus Hancock.
Hello. I don't know what you mean.
Happy New Year to you all.
And a little later on, we'll catch up with former Albion fullback and now an agent, Peter Smith, as well. Well, Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Welcome back into the studio, Marcus. Did you have a good Christmas and festive period?
Yes, indeed. I probably had as good as one as the Albion did over the festive period, to be honest with you.
What, a mixed bag?
Yes, well, quite, but, you know, yeah, it was good. Very quiet, just how I like it. Nothing happened. Which is good.
Yes.
No drama.
I know we'll get to talk about it in a bit more detail presently, but it was a little bit of a mixed bag. Some good stuff. Because we haven't really talked about, and we're not going to do it in detail this hour, but we haven't really talked about the Sheffield United and the Spurs games and the nature of the performances. But, you know, as a whole, we had sort of like the bad and the good over Christmas. And, you know, you've still got people panicking over the fact that, oh, we're only 4 points above the relegation zone. But, hey... Who gets relegated in January?
So. Well, this is very true. But Marcus, I mean, just for, by way of comparison, I know we can't really compare because it's two different managers and, well, largely the same players, actually. But, I mean, as a way of comparison, we're currently 2 points... worse off than we were at the corresponding stage last season. So
Then you got the second. If you're going to compare last season, you got the second half of the season to compare.
Exactly, where we got two wins and two points, nine points we got in the first part.
You
could just on that very quickly. You can see that the way the team is set up and the manager is that, you know, we all knew when we went a goal down, even when we had that decentish run, you're still like, well, how are we gonna get out of this game? Whereas at least with Potter, you feel, well, you know, we are creating chances, we are attacking. If we go 1-0 down, there is every chance we are going to get a goal back or maybe two. Okay, we might even concede, but you can just see he's not afraid to change the formation in the game. You know, last season, if we went 1-0 down, you're like, well, we might as well go home.
We're not going to get stuffed. We're not going to get stuffed 5-0 by Bournemouth this time.
Exactly.
But the other thing is, Marcus, as well. Obviously, since we didn't really talk about it at the time, but we went to Spurs and we came away from there frustrated that we didn't actually come away with anything at all. I mean, we were actually brilliant.
And this is away at Spurs.
And when you compare that to the performance there last year, where we went there and it was like, we were scared to go over the halfway line.
I think we crossed the halfway line twice. I think once when Andoni nearly got himself sent off, and once when I think Baram Kyle sort of did try and cross the halfway line in like the 88th minute
got
to try and break. And I think, yeah, you know, and it was, you know, it was backs to the wall. And that's the whole point. We are now going to places and we might actually pick up a result. Yeah.
7 points against Tokyo's top six this season. That's chalk and cheese from last.
To be fair, I mean, you know, at some points, you know, the big six are not quite as big now. Liverpool are running away with it. Man City and everybody else are sort of
stumbling,
which is where people can panic over the 4 points. Because whilst we were, I think it was, we were 26 at this point last season, but the team that were third from bottom were on, I think, 15. We are either 10 or 11 points clear of the third from bottom. Mm. We are now only 4 points clear, which is why people are probably still looking over the shoulder.
Yeah.
But that's because the bigger teams are dropping points against teams like Brighton, Sheffield United.
Apart from Liverpool, it's a much more compressed division, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, we've still got to be very much aware of the fact that we are Brighton and we are still very much nervously looking over our shoulder.
And us and 13 others.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I would say all the way up to probably, well, Everton.
And also, actually, our goal difference is not that shabby compared to others. So
no, it's not, actually. And again, you know, and they always say that's worth a point or half
a point.
Absolutely.
You know, as much as, and again, we'll talk about it in more detail, but, you know, we beat Bournemouth a 2-0, should have been 3-0, but for someone's elbow or their whatever it was. And frankly, you know, but for better shooting, okay, should have been 6 or 7. So
okay, all right, let's talk about the Bournemouth. I mean, I don't really want to talk about the Sheffield United game because it was the worst performance of the season, bar none.
At home,
thankfully, so. I was in St. Petersburg for that one, so I missed it completely.
I know, we know, Marcus. How many of those opera glasses did you come home with?
Oh, just the one from the Bolshoi Ballet.
All right.
Oh yes.
Hang on.
So Andy will be seething with jealousy.
Were you in St. Petersburg and Moscow?
Yeah, I went to Moscow and St. Petersburg.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, part of a cultural exchange with what? I don't know. Sort of
no.
A bag of compost in return. Yeah,
I just felt like it.
So, judging by your pictures, yeah, you were certainly representing.
Yeah, high end culture. You. I mean, I know, way beyond your ken.
Two ballets and an opera. So yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Have you bought a tutu? Are you going to take it up?
No, sadly not.
No, you're still with his ninja stuff.
I'd go to Glynne now, though. I actually have started.
You see, you know what Andy Bass is on about. We're just for our listener, just sort of like interloping on this. Andy Bass, our good friend, he likes not only heavy rock, but he likes opera, not necessarily rock operas. And I think we're all sort of sniffy at it. And I remember Andy taking me to the opera a few years ago. It was fantastic. Now Mark is, you know, with his advancing years and his graying beard, is actually getting a bit more culture into his system. AD, I think we'll probably have to wait till his 75th birthday or something. But
no,
we've got a long time to wait. But
I'm bang up for it. You know, but I mean, I just want to know if Marcus is going to go and watch Decapitated Cattle with Andy.
No.
Okay,
you probably need subtitles like you do for the opera.
Well, there you go. That's Sheffield United done. In a nutshell.
All right. So this is a football show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Go on.
So I mean, the Bournemouth game. We've done VAR to death on here. But I mean,
we're back to decapitated in that case. Let's do it beyond death. Come on.
It
doesn't work.
I mean, I was watching it in a pub in Chester. This game.
Who knew?
It was, which was absolutely brilliant actually, because it was like. They obviously clearly don't get many Brighton fans in there. I was just on my way back from Christmas. And as soon as they realised I was a Brighton fan, like a load of people came and joined me and started watching the game. And
really?
They were really complimentary about this, actually. It was great. But but no one to a man could understand what the hell was wrong with Dan Burn's goal. It's basically, I mean, when they're looking at it, the lines
should
are wrong.
Should we go to the pub?
Yeah. The lines are wrong when the ball was played. Are they taking into account the fact that basically he should be driving a clown's car, he's so big? It's, you know, the fact he's got bigger feet, he's got bigger elbows, he's got bigger
everything, more than we want to know.
VAR for me is actually a very good tool, but it's being used wrongly, and it's as simple as that.
Explain. Give us your take on this, mate.
I think it's a bit, you know, I think it's a wonderful tool to be used for things like unseen, and I know, you know, it can end up in farce, and it did with the Women's World Cup and things like that, where everybody's sort of appealing every 5 minutes and stuff like that. But it is good for sort of unseen, you know, pushes and shoves in the penalty area, which normally get missed, you know, the stray elbows that happen when the referees, you know, referees at the other end of the pit, you know. VAR should be used for those sort of things, and it should be used logically for the offsides, and it shouldn't be someone's heel or, you know, toenail or, you know, elbow or armpit. I mean, it's margin, you know, it's, you're talking about a playing card width, and people say, well, technically it's offside. It's like, well, you know, is it? Because
you have to define level, don't you?
If you've got clear daylight, clear and obvious, that was always the thing. If it's clear and obvious, but some of these offsides are not clear and obvious.
And what
annoys me most of all is when you see a professional footballer's a goal scored and they're trotting back to the halfway line. So the opposition think it's a goal. You've got professional footballers who, let's face it, are happy to whinge and moan about anything and everything, literally from diving to trying to win penalties to waving yellow cards to whatever. And if they think it's a goal, and they're literally, the goalkeeper's booted it out the net because I've conceded a goal, and they're all trotting back the halfway line, it's like, right, hang on, let's check. And you think, well, if the professionals think it's a goal,
because
they were quite clearly
by way of contrast, a stat's come out this week that last season linesmen got 94% of their decisions right.
Exactly.
Well, the thing is, I think that margin for error of 6%, I think is perfectly acceptable. It's a human game that involves human error. Listen, if our strikers were as accurate as that, I'd be cock-a-hoop.
But the other thing is, it's like, how many phases of play do you want to go back?
But this is it. And that's the other thing as well. You know, from the free kick, you know, it's like, is it from the time he struck the ball, or is it the ball has to go a whole rotation before you decide?
I think, to be fair, I don't think a defending player had touched the ball, had they?
Because he was ping-ponging around in there for a while. Yeah.
But it was from the original free kick.
Yeah, from the original free kick where Dan was level.
Yep.
And for me, levels onside to the naked
eye.
And
we want to see goals, don't we?
I mean, it was meant to be
ruled in favour of the attacker, but it's been ruled in favour of the defender. Rather than looking for a reason to give the goal, looking for a reason not to give the goal.
Yeah. And they really tried hard against Chelsea. But you've got, I mean, and ours wasn't even necessarily the worst VAR decision of the day.
No, it wasn't.
I think the worst one, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's hilarious when it's Mr. Tumble is given offside for he's got a size 12 feet rather than the size 10 feet, and it's that level of margin. But when you've got Pukki at Norwich, and his feet are actually behind the line of the defenders, but because he's leaning forward,
five decisions.
That's ridiculous. That's not clear and obvious, is it?
No, and you think, and I go back to what I've said on the show previously, there is no such thing as level. Because what part of you is level? Unless it seeks to presume that everyone is vertically upright, and therefore you've got a direct match. But when you've got a forward leaning forward towards the goal and a defender leaning away because they want to get out in order to hopefully catch him offside, you've got this kind of crossover shape. Which part of them is going to be offside? The feet are behind the line of the defender, but the shoulder is ahead. Do you think it doesn't work that way?
It's not. It's just utterly false. But I mean, let's just move into an alternative universe where the goal did stand. What a finish from Dan Byrne.
That's great, wasn't it? Yeah, brought it down and cranked it. I feel so sorry for that. It was a brilliant goal.
That's where Ali J got his talent from.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about the Iranian. I mean, what...
I'll tell you what, everyone is having to now do a big handbrake turn and realise actually accept Shiny over here. Go on then, be smug. You got it right.
I mean, I've always been convinced that there's a player there and it will come good. And
that about everybody, though.
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, anyone who pulls on the blue and white striped shirt, I am 100% behind them. They might be
absolutely
rubbish. They might be rubbish, and they might take a while to get. But you know, he's come over
Leon
different.
Best.
Different culture, different food. He himself has said it's taken him a while to settle.
Cultural difference between the Netherlands and England is massive, obviously.
Well, last season he was playing under Chris Hughton, where basically he came from a league where he had absolutely zero defensive responsibility at all, and he had to work. Last year he was having to work front and back, and it wasn't his natural game.
True.
Potter's actually given him a role where he's obviously he's out of the pitch, so he still has to do some defending, but he's basically been shorn of large amounts of that defensive responsibility.
He's got a more creative role this year.
Absolutely, and you know, and we all know sometimes it takes one to come off your backside or a lucky goal or just anything to go your way. And you know, I mean, let's face it, I mean, what was your reaction when you saw that he was in the side against Bournemouth?
I thought, what's going on? I mean, I know
we do have some injuries.
Exactly. Because bearing in mind, it goes back to what we were saying just before the show, where at the beginning of the season, when the squad was still quite thin, because we still got this Quiero injured, I think March was injured, you know, but and much as we love him, Gaetan Bong, for example, was almost like first choice, and Ali wasn't making the bench even then, and you kind of thought, well, his obviously career must be over with the Albion, because we are, to quote Harry Redknapp, we were down to our bare bones, and he still wasn't making the first team. He wasn't even making the first team squad, and then all of a sudden,
can I quote Billy Bragg here? He wasn't making the first team; he was just making the first team laugh.
Yeah, quite exactly. And then all of a sudden, from nowhere, I mean, he featured on the bench, I think, just before the Bournemouth game. And then all of a sudden, he starts. And you're like,
he came on against Wolves, didn't he?
That's right. And he did. To be fair, he did all right. And then, but to then see him starting, it's like, well, crikey. Have you lost the marbles again, Potter? I know you have
And then he buries it with aplomb into the bottom corner.
Yeah, quite.
It's great for us. We've scored a goal 3 minutes in. Fantastic.
And against Bournemouth as well, who our record, worse than our record against Palace over the last 10 years. So
yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's not great, but I mean, it was like Al said, he did finish it with aplomb, and just look at his face in the words of the great Barry Davis. It's like, just look at his face.
Well, the thing is, it clearly meant so much more to him. I mean, like I say, for us, goal, fantastic. Blimey, it's Ali J. Wow, great finish. Finally, we get to see what he can do. And yeah, the what it meant to him, you know, sort of the you could see the demons lifting, you could see the world coming off his shoulders. And when you have that, I mean, it kind of shows on a certain level, you know. Not every footballer is a mercenary. Not every footballer, they're well paid. And
it adds a human element.
It adds a massive human element to it. I mean, the fact that they get sort of huge salaries, I think, actually does cloud the fact that ultimately they are human.
Yeah.
You know, I would do this for that amount of money. Really? Yeah. You know, are we going to actually talk about your mental health issues and that money is actually going to dissipate every single one of them? No, you have your stuff. He wants to be a professional footballer. He wants to do the things that he is being paid to do. Well, and when he does it, and he does it brilliantly in such a moment and in such a way, because it didn't just come up his backside. It wasn't a lucky goal.
No,
it was a beautiful strike.
It was great.
You can see what it means. I'm so pleased for him.
Arrowed into the corner.
Yeah, and I think that's right as well. And Alan's exactly right. And what has been good about Ali J, because we've all, you know, I mean, I've been the first to criticise him, waste of money, etc., etc. I think most of us have. Apart from
AD.
But, you know, what was always the noises coming out of the camp, that, you know, that he's still training hard. He wasn't like some of the other rogue elements that have been shipped out elsewhere.
Sure.
You know, he knuckled down, he still carried on training. You know,
he could have been a professional.
Quite, exactly. That's the word, professional.
Yeah.
You know, no hissy fits, no in the media.
No.
Manager needs to play me or I'm off, you know.
Well, by
blah,
then.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, quite. Yeah. Although, would anybody have actually wanted it? It's a question.
Wow.
But having said that, now,
yes.
I think now, Barber's probably thought, oh, great, that's another 10 million on the fee if we do end up selling it.
We're going to come back and talk about him again in a minute. For obvious reasons, but let's just finish with Bournemouth here. I mean, how bad are Bournemouth, really? I mean,
hopefully rubbish.
Hopefully they go down, and we never see them again. Basically,
what can we say? What he said.
Yeah. You know, I have no time for the club, as you know. But bearing in mind, they're, you know, what we just said earlier. Don't want to repeat it.
No.
Smug Eddie's plucky little.
I mean, he is a good manager, but they do have a lot of injuries. I think that is the one thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Apparently, their injury list is virtually a first team 11.
But, so. I mean, we know they're capable of going on a run as well. So
that's the thing. You think they're going to be? You know, you think, oh yeah, they're going to lose that. They're away at Liverpool, and then they'll win 1-0, and you're like, oh really?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. You know? But actually, it's just the fact that just for once, you know, because you always feel that Eddie had the sign over us. He had the best, you know, referees. You know, and we go back to the penalty that Cowley given against him. When he was at Burnley, the two red cards, one of which was deserved, but you know, if Ashley Barnes was going to get a red card, then so would the other fella.
Yeah.
You know, the disallowed goal that Glenn Murray scored down at their place.
Yeah,
you know,
the handball outside the penalty area.
And you think,
season,
finally, I mean, like I said, even then, he got a 3-0 win turned into a 2-0 win.
Yeah.
Even then, it's something, isn't it? It's always something.
Wasn't he the manager at Burnley when Barnes and Alan said, was he listening? No, he wasn't. Thanks, mate. I don't think he was actually, but I did look at his as well. You're listening to Radio Reverb, AD isn't.
Carry on. What else you got in your notes?
Yeah, well, I was basically going to say, I mean, we all appreciated Ali J finally getting on the score sheet, and that was wonderful. But there was another player in that match who actually was,
and it's a bloke who's on fire at the moment.
Basically, there was a comment on our Twitter feed that said, "Aaron
Moy
can find
don't
room
it.
In a single bed with Jim
College." Yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah, that was a good.
can I just point out this is the opinion of AD Packham. We do not do body shaming on this show, which is just as well.
But he also got another one. He's been named the Pasty Perlo.
Yeah, that's probably well. That's probably a bit bad, but yes, I mean, last few games, absolutely fantastic, running the show. And I think someone said, more complimentary was that if he had pace, he would be playing in the Champions League.
Yeah,
because he is that good.
He finds the space.
You can see what City
he picks the pass.
Yes. Exactly, because you saw because he was a City player and then he went on loan to Huddersfield. I don't think he played much for City.
We actually tried to sign him from City.
I believe we did. We did. That's right.
We got loan with Bournemouth for a season, and
when
he actually signed there permanently, we were actually after him at the same time.
That's right. So you can see what City saw in him, but obviously he didn't have the pace. But for us.
But he's also the kind of player, I think he's knocking 30 now, if he haven't turned 30 already, but he's the sort of player who can play to sort of 36, 37, on account of the fact all he has to do is sit in the centre circle and spray the passes around. Yeah. One thinks of, you know, the equivalent of Radistin Kishishev, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of, you know, he'll find the space, he'll find that extra 2 yards,
yeah,
and he'll get the sort of like the kids running around him.
Exactly.
You know, it sets someone else off here. Which, to be honest, is what he does now, apart from he still will do the sort of like the 30, 40 yard run.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think he'll be doing sort of five or six of them rather than 10 or 12.
He's 29.
He's 29, so he's got easily another sort of 6-7 seasons in him.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and then like Teddy Sheringham, you know, the first 2 yards are in his head. You
absolutely.
Know, it's that sort of thing. He's sort of, yeah.
But up until this game, again, Aaron hadn't actually broken his scoring duck for the Albion, and what a goal to do it.
Now, this is the point, isn't it? Because of their sort of relative technical skills, which one is better? Is it Moyes' goal or is it Ali Jay's against Chelsea? Because they both have their wonderful considerations about them, don't they?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you've got with Ali Jay's was just like pure genius. With this one, you've got to add into the wonderful ball from Trossard into the mix as well, where he's
the little
curled
chip.
In
yeah, yeah.
with
yeah,
the
yeah,
outside of his foot, yeah. And like, and then that little body swerve to like, lose the defender and put it in.
I mean, they were both instinctive because obviously, you know, he sort of realised he was in a position and then curls around it. But you see a lot of strikers do it. So from a midfielder, you know,
maybe.
It's hard to compare the two. I mean, aesthetically, I think Ali Jay's is better
because
you've got pictures of him.
It's a sexy goal.
yeah, that's the word.
Yeah. But first, you are listening to the Albion Rule here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. I'm just going to pass this shirt. It's got a lot of flair about this one, Marcus. I'm just, if you could describe that one for me.
All right. Okay. Well, it's primarily. Well, the sponsor's flair with what looks like a sort of Japanese flag made by Nike. It's got a collar. I'm a big fan of shirts with collars. Football shirts with collars.
Yeah.
I wish Albion would go back to them.
Sure.
It's basically blue, and it has a yellow, sort of yellow thin stripes going sort of horizontally across the shoulders and about halfway down to the sort of belly button there.
What I look at here is it's kind of Wimbledon-ish.
Yes.
Blue with a yellow sort of trim.
I'm loving that the yellow kind of.
I do like that yellow, the blue
trim.
And yellow works, you're right. It does.
As for who it is, seeing as, you know, the flare with a big red dot on it, I mean, that's full stops go, that's slightly ridiculous. I have absolutely no idea who it is, where it's from or anything.
Has he taken out the club badge or is it just...
No, it's just not on there.
Oh, right.
Okay, well, in that case...
That might give you an idea of the year of it. I mean, obviously, there is a sponsor, but there were a lot of shirts around.
That sponsor shirt is actually way oversized. I mean, they're not allowed it. So it certainly makes me believe, therefore, it's not an English club. So, okay, stab in the dark, someone from... Bulgaria,
Sweden.
I absolutely adore this shirt. I mean, it kind of reminds me, obviously it's a different colour, but of the French shirts of around that time, like Saint Etienne.
Well, it's those pinstripes, but it isn't actually
French. And this is the first shirt of the week of the decade. He says, and here it is, and I hope it gets a lot more flair in the weeks to come.
Go on,
nod to the sponsor there, and we're going to need it. If we're going to combat VAR, says Phil. Yes, Philip.
Yes, we've already done that.
This is the 1984-85 away shirt of Dutch Eerste Divisie side SC Dordrecht. They are known as the Schrapperkoppen, which is translated to as sheep heads, and they play at the 4,235 capacity Reewel Hoogwerkers Stadion.
I can just see our good friend Werner Schroer from the Netherlands just face palming this.
At the time they wore this, their official name was Drechtstreden 79 or DS 79, which is another nickname of theirs. After a name change when the club went from amateur to professional status in 1979. Previously, they were Dordrecht Football Club, and since their formation in 1883. Are you keeping up at the back? 1990, they changed their name again to Dordrecht 90, and then after a merger with Vertebol Vereniging Schiedam.
Oh, oh, Phil, you absolute beast.
They were briefly known as SVV Dordrecht. Most recently, in 2002, they became FC Dordrecht. Johan Cruyff played three times for the side in 1981 and linked to the UK. Well, current left-back Brandon Rutherford Omonde Otterwill began his career at Arsenal before making 50-odd appearances for Swindon before he moved to Holland in 2018. Links to Brighton, well...
None.
The proverbial bad penny, Kenny Agustin, played a handful of times for him in 2016.
Did he, bloody hell?
And by the way, he's now signed for Bradford Park Avenue. So there you go. Thank you very much for that, Phil.
Yes, I'm Phil. I love you and I hate you because he struggles with English.
So did a good job on that,
to do it in double Dutch is quite
double
horrific.
Dutch, yeah.
I just want to point out here, and I've said it on last week's show, but I've got to say it with this. It's a kind of community announcement. This is Radio Reverb. This is a community radio station. We offer so many aspects of broadcasting. No one here gets paid. Everyone does this voluntary. All the producers get do this voluntary. So we have we're a community based radio station. We operate from donations, sponsorships, and grants only. Now, if you feel like being lovely and generous, appreciate it's just after Christmas. But if there might be a couple of shillings left over in the bank account, then please do go to RadioReverb.com, hit the donate button, and help keep this brilliant radio station going. What do we have to offer? Well, we've got this football show, which is one thing. But you've then got third generation. You've got LGBT. You've got garden. You've got food and drink. You've got just about every single musical genre going. And we are a public, effectively a public broadcaster. Local radio is in a little bit of turmoil because other radio stations, they're not so much being closed down as taken over and brutalised into this homogenised nonsense. This is stuff that is done from the heart. So if you really like what we're doing and feel like helping, keeping us going, please do go to RadioReverb.com and hit the donate button and keep this brilliant radio station and keep this brilliant community asset going. Thank you very much. AD, yep. You're back in the room.
Absolutely. Now, as you all know, we all love a marauding fullback at the Albion, and we now welcome a true Albion hero in the shape of Peter Smith. Peter, are you there?
I'm there. How you doing?
I'm very well. Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you.
And where do we find you today?
I'm in deep Sussex in Mayfield. Just finished clay pigeon shooting with Stafford Brown, celebrating his 49th birthday.
Blimey, we all remember Stafford. He's it was
Gillingham-tastic.
Yeah.
The other thing I know about Mayfield, I think, is that's where Roger Daltrey's got his fishery farm.
That's correct. Yeah.
So I mean, obviously you've got your Bramley links, but are you still based in Sussex?
Yeah, I live in Tunbridge Wells.
Close enough.
So obviously, yeah, close enough.
Borders, socially and culturally, obviously. We've always said that Crawley can. If we want to move the boundaries, Crawley can go to Surrey. They can have that, and we'll have Tunbridge Wells back in Sussex.
Of course. So,
absolutely.
Now, Peter. Obviously, you represented the Albion with great distinction, and we spoke to you last time you were on air. But how are you finding the Albion under this season?
Hey, do you know what? I think they've been up and down. I wouldn't say inconsistent. I'd just say it's such a hard league, forgiving league. And, you know, I went recently to watch them play Sheffield United, which maybe a draw would have been the outcome.
It was our worst performance of the season.
Yeah, do you know what? It reminded me a scrappy game, a bit of a championship sort of match, actually, to be fair. It wasn't very fluid. It was a scrappy game.
But it was, you were there in a professional guise, because one of your clients, obviously you're now an agent, he's garnering a lot of positive headlines at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Wilders and Alan Neil are doing a sterling job up at Sheffield with a quite low budget in terms of Premiership, but he's gone playing some great football. He's given them an identity. And I think he's proved a lot of people wrong. I thought everyone thought Sheffield United would be the whipping boys of the Premier League, but that's not the case.
I was probably one of them, to be fair.
No, he's doing a fantastic job.
But I mean, obviously Chris Wilder is another guy that played for the Albion. Can you remember? Do you know what his Albion, probably Albion highlight would have been?
Not really. Was he there on loan, Chris?
No, I think he was our player. I think that the thing that most people might remember him for is actually not. It was actually at Withdean, but he was playing for Halifax, I think it was, and a ball got played over the top, and he tried to clear it, and he scooped it, and it went straight up in the air. Bobby Zamora was underneath it and volleyed it left foot into the corner, probably for the goal of Withdean.
It was. It's been described as Van Basten-esque.
Yes. So, but having said that, I think a lot of us have fond memories of Chris Wilder. I mean, at the time that he was at the club, we'd only just come back to Withdean, having spent 2 years away, and you know, and we were a club very much being built from the foundations almost.
Of course.
And we're still only sort of like 18 years on from that. But the point is, Chris Wilder, bless him, was actually an intrinsic part of the renaissance of the club that we know today. So for me, he's got a, you know, I'm really pleased, even though it's, you know, his team beat us, I'm really pleased that, you know, we he was part of that, and good for him.
And we've got to give we didn't play great in that game, but Sheffield United played their part in that game, and they were the reason we didn't play great in that game. But anyway, moving on, basically, obviously your job is now an agent. Is there any Albion players you're representing at the moment?
Not a single sausage, unfortunately. obviously I used to look after Caldy, which I still do, actually.
Alright. It's his birthday today, actually, as well.
Actually, I didn't even know that, so thanks for the heads.
Not
up.
At all.
He's about to get an Amazon voucher.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, happy birthday, Caldy. 38 today.
Unfortunately not. I've not spent a lot of time down in Sussex at Brighton for the last sort of 15 months. I spent most of my life in Sheffield, up and down, seeing Chris Wilder and other players.
Yeah, so, but I mean, obviously the January window is now open. How busy do you think it's actually going to be?
I think it'll be busier than last year. I mean, the summer was quite strange, especially in the Championship. There's a lot of clubs under soft embargoes, overspending, new owners, new managers coming in. So it was quite quiet. So therefore, I'm hoping January will be a lot more activity in this window. Albeit, I think it'll be loan deals more than actual purchases.
So in all this time, here you are, clay pigeon shooting. It shows how busy you are at the moment.
he's got cat fever.
I'm on my way to Brentford after this.
But so what does, you know, as an agent, what does, I guess that probably the close season and January are probably the busiest times for you. So what, give us a flavour as what it's like, what January is like for you as an agent.
Well, it's a lot of telephone calls, speaking to a lot of CEOs, director of football, trying to pacify players, trying to manage their expectations. In terms of moves, you know, from a player's perspective, they don't really look at the back end of a football club and how it runs in terms of a business model. And I think clubs are now trying to run it more business-like, and therefore, you know, they don't go and spend willy-nilly like they have done in previous years. So it's about managing expectations, trying to actually assist football clubs in the lower leagues with loan players that are on a decent wage but will take a wage percentage to go on loan and develop their talent.
Because players are players at the end of the day, they just want to play, right? So it's like, there's a lot of, I mean there's been rumours, I mean it is only a rumour, and I'm hoping there's no truth in it at all, but I mean it's that Glenn Murray's been linked with Nottingham Forest at the moment.
Wouldn't surprise me. They're looking for a man up front to go and score goals, you know.
What you were saying there just now, Peter, you're raising a kind of an interesting point. You're saying that, you know, it's loan deals mostly in January, and clubs are reining themselves in, and they're making others appreciate the business model a little bit better. Now, with what's gone on recently, and certainly sort of as high level profile as Bolton and Bury, and all right, you've got bad owners, but you've also got bad business models. Do you think that actually the introduction of FFP, irrespective of how many clubs are trying to worm their way around it, do you think that the introduction of FFP has made the clubs actually take stock and try and run their business a bit better?
Yes, for sure. But I think this is something that they can't turn around in you know 12 months, 24 months. They've got players, existing players on big contracts. If you look at Sunderland for an example, you know, that are in a right state. What a fantastic club. But they're in Division One. They had players there last season, you know, playing Division One on £36,000-£38,000 a week. Doesn't work mathematically.
But you were talking about your links with Sheffield United there with, yes, with Chris Wilder. Now, one such player, you mentioned Sunderland, Jack Rodwell, famously on stupid amounts of money there. He's just signed for Sheffield United.
Yes, he's signed to the end of the season. Chris has had him in for the last 4 weeks, worked with him, made sure he's fit and able. You know, Jack's had a bit of a snakes and ladders career. You know, moving to Man City didn't quite work out, going to Sunderland didn't quite work out. He's 28. You know, if anyone can get him back on the right pathway, it's Chris Wilder.
Sure.
You know, I think he's proven with the players he's brought in, the likes of John Egan, Ender Stevens, George Bulldog, John Fleck, who came in on a free, Didzy, he's made them better players. He's made them actually Premiership players.
Okay.
So Jack's got a chance. You know, he's got an opportunity.
Okay. Now, I mean, obviously, when you were playing for the Albion, and you were this marauding fullback who
with very
back
very
to
long
front.
Legs, if I remember rightly.
we all just absolutely adored watching you because you left everything out there, and you know at a time where there wasn't a lot of smiles around you lifted the place. But you were kind of like the template now is for that sort of fullback, and you kind of fit that template at the time. I mean, how do you see the role of a fullback now? I mean. Is that what everyone's after in this window?
Yeah, I mean, they play the fullbacks high, and they want them to bomb on. The fullbacks are more like wingers. When I played, I just had the energy. I just wanted to go box to box. I wanted to defend, but I also wanted to attack and try and break the lines and make things happen. And I think that, you know, it wasn't necessarily talent that got me there. It was endeavour. Do you know what I mean? I came into Brighton, into you know the Football League, and thinking, "Wow, how do I get through this? How do I get in the team?" Yeah. Mm. And do you know what? You get there, you work hard, you know, you fight for the team, you fight for the football club, and that's what I did.
Yeah, because when we signed you, you've been out in New York working as a community worker, and you were considering a career in that over here.
I was looking to go into social work at some point. I was at university at the time, and that was sort of my pathway. I didn't really have any thoughts of becoming a professional footballer.
Mm. So yeah. I mean, we've got to sort of move on a little bit soon, but I've just got to ask you this. Now, you came and joined us, well, it's probably, 24, 25 years ago now. I mean, you know, some of these times they just blur into... Now, you obviously also joined us at a time when Brighton Hove Albion was not in the best shape. You know, the fans and the club were at loggerheads. There was stuff going on behind the scenes. It really wasn't a great place to be. And yet, as AD said, you know, when you have a player who you can see is leaving everything out on the pitch for his team, for his club. So, given what the time that you were with us, what are your memories of playing for Brighton? I mean, how do you look back on it?
I must confess, they were all good memories. You know, it was always. I remember going on pre-season to Ireland with Liam Brady, and he got us all lined up and said, "Look, we've got a snitch in the camp. Someone's, you know, told the media that we haven't got paid." You know, so that was sort of my first sort of thing to professional, and I'm like standing there thinking, well, obviously it's not me because I've been here for a day, you know. And there's like Raphael Mead and Steve Foster and Colin Pates and Mark Chamberlain, players that I'd watched, you know, on TV. Mm. So it was all a bit of a like a blur. It was a bit of, you know, this is a bit surreal. And as soon as I started playing, you know, sort of. I managed to get in the first team and play week in, week out. It was just a great journey. And I often walked on the training pitch, you know, every day of the week, and you'd always have one of the young lads moaning. And I used to say to them, when you're driving to work today, have a look at the man the dustbin man or the builder or the guy driving the delivery man or the postman, and just think what you're doing. You go in, you're going to have your breakfast, you're going to train for 2 hours, you're going to have a laugh and a joke with your mates, you're going to have some lunch, and then you're going to go home. And I'm saying, you know, you couldn't ask for a better way of living.
Is that what you tell your clients now?
All the time. I think the lads are in that goldfish bowl, you know, especially if you've come through the system, if you've come through the academy, you know, if you become a scholar and then you become a pro, you haven't done anything on Civvy Street. Your life's been a bubble.
Yeah, I mean, that was something I wanted to ask you, actually, because, I mean, you mentioned academies there. Now, the landscape of football has changed over the last couple of years or so. I mean, it's going back to where clubs are actually prepared to take a chance with their youth product. I mean, Chelsea obviously having to do it this year. Us giving Stephen Elzatti and Aaron Connolly their opportunity this year. I mean, how does it affect you with the clubs looking to, like, go with their academy products?
No, I think that's great. I mean, we do have a lot of the young players. You know, we're picking them up at sort of late 15, 16 years of age. And it's a slow burn because, you know, the percentage is very high. 85, 90% will not make it as professional footballers. Mm. It's as simple as that. And, you know, we're trying to sell them a dream. The football club are trying to sell them a dream. But at the end of the day, if they don't make the cut, the football club will release them and then they're on their own.
So, you know, obviously, it's down to the clubs to prepare them for that. Presumably, you play a hand in that as well.
I don't think the clubs do prepare them if they get released. You know, once they get released and become independent from that football club, that's the last you'll hear from them. There's no sort of back-end service to go, look, in 3 months' time, how are you doing? Have you got any more trials and so on and so forth? And it sometimes has conflicting. I have conflicting conditions with football clubs because they say, "Well, don't get an agent when you're 16. You don't need one." They get released at 18, and they're like, "Well, what do I do now? The club's not going to help me, and I haven't got an agent." So how does that work?
So I mean, obviously, as well today, particularly all the FA Cup games this weekend, they're all kicking off a minute late as part of the Heads Up campaign. I mean, and it is encouraging people to try and think about their mental health, and which is a great. I mean, obviously, I know you're just talking about these young kids getting their dreams being cut, stone dead.
Being cut, shattered.
So I mean, there's massive mental health implications there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think whether you're 16, 18, especially in the world of football, 23, 25, 30, there's always that insecurity within football. It's a real dog eat dog game, and within the camp, even, you know, because everyone wants to play, everyone wants your position, you know. It's a psychological battle as well, you know. And if you're not managed correctly, you know, some managers don't speak to the players because that's, you know, that's the way they do things, and the assistant manager does everything. And, you know, some players don't react good to that either, you know. So it's, I think mental illness and just being mentally strong is a massive talking point within football. I knew I wasn't the best player, but I was mentally strong. Nothing was ever going to stop me, regardless of my fundamental ability to play football.
Pete, you probably weren't far off being our best player. So, Pete, you're off to Brentford today. Have you got any of your players in that game?
Yeah, I've got a right back called Tommy Smith, who plays for Stoke. Used to play for Huddersfield. He was a captain for Huddersfield and was a captain when they got promoted to the Premier League. Yeah.
And is there a degree of cup fever going on for you today? The magic of the cup, is it still alive?
It's the FA Cup. I remember playing at the Goulston against Canvey Island, actually.
Don't remind us of that.
You scored. Well,
I scored, great goal. So,
John Keely was
goal. I also remember playing at Canvey Island the first leg, and the changing room was about 12 foot square, and their kit man put DP in all our slips previous to the game. Yeah, so So
that's feel the so burn. Low. That's so low. Yeah. Oh. Oh. I know it was a cold day, but even so.
Yeah. Oh. And obviously, Ian Brady's famous quote.
We actually nearly lost the game.
We did.
It was a tight call, and I think Liam actually resigned after that game.
Yeah, great memories. And like I say, I mean, we're going to be hopefully catching up with John Keely in the next few weeks. So
lovely guy.
He is a lovely fella. Okay. So
With that, Pete, we're going to have to leave it there. So thanks for joining us. We'll catch you up again at some point, hopefully. And thanks for talking to us. And enjoy the day.
My
hope you're not too busy.
I'm not. Okay. Take care.
All right. Cheers, Peter.
Cheers.
Former Albion fullback and now agent Peter Smith there.
That was lovely hearing from him. Absolutely. I know that you interviewed him before, AD, but I generally didn't realise he was a Brummie.
He's still got a lot of affection for the Albion. Still lives in the area. And
has the dreadlocks.
Were you there on that Canvey Island day?
Not the away game. If my granny had
area.
Balls, quote you know, the Liam Brady one, yeah. But I was there for the replay, obviously, because that's why I remember him scoring.
Absolutely,
in front of the North Stand. John Keely was in goal for.
Absolutely, yeah. And I love the bants. Yeah. I mean, I hate the word bants, but we had the good bants with him because you're right there, right behind the goal, I think he loved it anyway. So
okay, well let's move it on to New Year's Day now. Marcus, what is the best goal you've ever seen live?
Florin Andoni against Crystal Palace.
Just for the context.
Just for the context of how much it meant.
We don't score overhead goals, do we?
All joking aside, was the last one Craig McCall-Smith or something away?
Yeah, that was away.
They happen very infrequent. No, all joking aside, that was one of the best goals I think I will ever see live.
I'm going to be really, really picky here. The thing that really would have made it is if it had gone in on the full rather than bouncing in.
True, but I would have liked me, Brett, and Matthew have an obsession with crossbar and in. We would have loved hit a crossbar down and in.
a bit like Spanish Saves goal against Palace. Free kick.
Yes, that's a good
didn't
example.
Touch Yeboah the back of the
against
net.
Liverpool. Sort of thing where it smashes in off the bar. That would. But no, I mean, what a beautifully timed, beautifully executed. You know, it was almost an alignment
of
the stars.
And of all people, as we were saying here.
I mean, the thing is, I was obviously sitting next to our good friend Andy Bass, and the sheer childlike glee on his face. It's like wow.
He couldn't believe it, could he? You see his reaction. All of a sudden, he's stunned, and then he falls to the floor, kind of like.
And the
everybody's
kids
got
the
their hands
in
there.
The camera pans.
It's real boys' own stuff, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. When you try and execute that, you've either got to get it right or you're going to look such a dummy.
Yeah. I mean, let's not forget, was it John Obika tried the same thing?
Did he?
When we had him on loan in the Championship. I can't remember who we were playing at that time. And obviously that one just...
It looks great for the photographers, but that's about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember when? That was a bit beautiful.
But that probably shows his confidence now that he would try that.
That's
because
a fair point.
He would not have done... I mean, we know he's had a bit of a stop-start with the Albion. Hmm. We know... Damn well, he probably wouldn't have tried that last season. No. But obviously, he's got a bit of his mojo back.
Yeah. Well, you saw he got his mojo back.
And that cross at the end of the game, which Malpape thumped straight in the keeper.
Yeah, he'd have got an assist because he still hasn't got an assist yet.
That was a fantastic cross.
It was a pinged pass that you think, why can't you do it? Well, not him, but anyone. Why can't you do that all the time?
Let's just go back to the beginning on this one a little bit. So, and Ali, were you surprised Ali didn't start in this game, actually?
I was. I thought after this, he'll probably start today, but after his performance against Bournemouth, I thought he would have, Potter's obviously rotating the team because there's lots of games. So,
Your Bete Noir also started.
And thankfully, you can't blame him for the goal, though I blame him for the confidence that was lost when the ball came over and everybody's looking at each other.
We're talking about Adam Webster, of course.
well, that's
now, now, I mean,
What do you mean, of course? I mean, you know, I mean, it's
teacher's pet Adam Webster, I think, is the expression.
Okay. Without swearing, what is your main beef? I mean, I'm sure that others might agree, but what is your main beef about Adam Webster?
My main beef about Adam Webster, for me, he is a fancy pants non-defender that's playing in defence, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, he can pass the ball, brilliant. But actually, you know what? You do need defenders that can actually defend, because there are periods of the game where you are going to have to knuckle down, and you do need people like Duffy. Limited though he is, you know exactly what you're going to get. That, and even though he wasn't his fault specifically, the goal that Chelsea scored from, I think if Duffy was playing, that would have been headed away. And against Bournemouth, he had a very ropey first half, Duffy, to be fair. But in that second half, I thought he was magnificent. He headed everything away. It's like, right, come on in, you know, bat every time. You know, Webster would have ducked under it, tried something fancy, lost the ball, given it away. And I just, and it's
not
like
that bad.
Oh,
sorry.
I just don't get it. But because he can make a run out of defence every now and then, people have him down as Franz Beckenbauer, which he isn't, by the way.
I've mentioned this before, he's been compared.
He does. No, to be fair, he does. To play him up front, then, if
he's
we've done some
mobile defender this season.
Yeah, exactly. But then that's because Duffy hasn't been playing, I think. So it's kind of, you know, it's one of those. Yeah,
Duffy has been on the score sheet this season.
He has, yeah, against
also
Norwich. Yeah,
absolutely.
And Dale Stevens was again on the bench. Was this just like rotation, or because that's two games on the road? Usually for the league games,
it was after New Year's Day, and allegedly the three ones that like a pint of Guinness were on the bench on New Year's Day. So draw your own conclusions.
I'm always going to have a field day after this show, aren't I?
I'm sure there's nothing
allegedly.
In there. I'm sure
Moy, Prupper and Bissouma absolutely bossed the show.
Yeah,
you know, they played well against Palace. They bossed the show against Bournemouth. I just felt that Bissouma, yeah, it was either the system or him, or I wasn't sure, but he looked to be getting under everyone's feet. It wasn't working in the first half. The passing across the whole midfield wasn't as great as it could have been. You saw Moy pinging him against Bournemouth. He wasn't doing it against Chelsea, and I don't think that was down to Chelsea. It's the silly little 5-yard passes that go astray that actually, you know, that really grind your gears.
I think, I mean, there's been talk about across media. I mean, there's been a lot of games over Christmas, and I mean, that middle round of games, I'm not quite sure why it's there, because, you know, you do see an awful lot more fatigue, particularly on New Year's Day, when they're, I mean,
it was a poor quality game in terms of you expecting Chelsea to be a bit more pingy. I saw Chelsea playing against Southampton on telly on Boxing Day. I thought Chelsea were dreadful. Now Southampton did a number on them, but for that game, even though we're playing Chelsea, their away record's pretty good, I thought Chelsea were actually mediocre. I thought they were there for the taking, personally. Some of their quality wasn't great, and, you know, as the game grew on, it helped with Ali J's overhead kick. I thought, you know, it really fired the crowd up. Like when you say again with Mopé's chance from Ali J's pass, it was great, and we had our chances.
And
Chelsea were up against it, and I thought they were there for the picking off.
Second half, we were all over the place.
The first half we were particularly awful. We still had chances. I mean, Trossard brought a fantastic save out of,
and that was a great save from the keeper from Connolly as well. Where Connolly just nearly nudged it over the line. That was brilliant instinctive save.
We all appreciate what Stephen Alzatti brings to the party, but his decision making when he's confronted with goal, he could just learn
just
to take
a shot away.
I know.
You saw Chelsea doing that, to be fair. They were getting their shots away. They weren't particularly good shots, but they were getting their shots away. But the ball comes rebounding back to him from a set piece or a corner or something like that, and he's got to take three touches before setting himself
sometimes
up. Sometimes just have a swing, mate. If it ends up in row Z, at least you got your shot away.
I mean, no one's going to, I'm not going to blame anyone for having a trying to score on my team.
Absolutely.
Goal,
if you're rubbish at it, hashtag Neil Morpoy, then, you know, fine. But get your shot away. You never know what's going to happen if you do. It might be a rebound and they'll run up the other end, but get your shot away.
I agree. Yeah.
But, I mean, like I said, I mean, the against Chelsea previously, our home games, we've lost, even though we've played quite well into them, we have lost heavily in the past. So it's...
Thing is, what we've had over Christmas, if you're going to take Christmas as a whole, you had Sheffield United, a poor performance, Spurs, a very good performance, and in each case we got nothing out of them. You then go to the Bournemouth game, did really well, Bournemouth were there for the taking, and actually 2-0 really flattered them. And then we get to the Chelsea game. I'd say a not great performance on the back of the two really good ones previous to that. A not great performance, but Chelsea themselves were poor. And like I say, everyone did look leggy. Yeah. Pretty much all the teams looked leggy. And so we had a mixed bag. We got 4 points out of those four games. You want a lot more out of it. You know, we'd have bitten your hand off for a point against Spurs. You really want to get something, at the least a point against Sheffield United. And I think a lot of teams, as we're implying with Peter Smith just now, are underestimating Sheffield United.
They're unbeaten away this season.
The second
apart to Liverpool game.
The second half of the season, I think, obviously, I don't say they'll be found out, but everything changes.
Yeah.
When we play Watford, they're not going to be as bad as they were in the, on the opening day
absolutely
of the season,
not.
That
yeah,
kind of thing.
Turn the corner.
So you look at 4 points, you think, okay, fine. It's just interesting where those 4 points came from. Mm. So
Chelsea were really hanging on towards the end of that game, and
we had our tails up.
And and you mentioned there that Ali J was just absolutely instrumental in that.
He's getting that ball. The match
that was brilliant. That was great. Well, to be fair, no one really played well.
Not
other
really.
Than,
no.
So the I goal
mean,
made.
You scored. You scored. I mean, what superlative would you use to describe that goal?
It was all right.
Not bad. Yeah, magical.
Yeah, sexy. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we've just quickly. We are coming towards the end of the show now, but I just want to. Is the FA Cup today?
It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
The
biggest club in the world.
Yeah, the rivalry is intense. But, you know, actually, let's quickly go back to the last time we played them. That 2-1 home win.
Oh,
Murray
yeah.
got sent off.
It did.
That was when your beer tasted a little bit better
it
at the
did.
End of the
that
night,
was,
didn't
that
it?
That was probably the game where you thought, we're probably going to do it this year.
Yeah.
The double save from Stockdale.
The double save from Stockdale. Knockouts last minute. We were down to 10 men.
Yeah.
And then they went down to 9 men. And it was absolutely
yeah. They just lost their heads. Forestieri, a little squit.
But that was the game where you think, yeah, it's going to be our year.
And then Knockhart just comes up with a winner, trolling everyone again.
But I mean, magic of the cup. How seriously do you think we should take the competition this year? Like I said at the top of the show, there is a feeling that the FA Cup maybe hindered our season last year. Or
maybe. But
I don't think we will play like the team we played against Aston Villa, which was virtually the under-16s.
Yeah.
But I think it would be a very weakened team. Glenn will probably start if he doesn't.
I suspect two or three kids. I think it was supposed to be two or three kids against Villa, but there were some injuries that
That's
week.
That's right, there was.
So I suspect two or three of the kids.
But that is it, though. That's all we've got time for today. So thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Alan Wears. I've been Adi Packham. FA Cup action today. Is Jahan Bash going to be on the side? And who knew? Jahan Bash is good.
Your lipstick marks still on your coffee cup. Oh, yeah. Got a fist of pure emotion. Got a head of shattered dreams. Gotta leave it all behind now. Whatever I said, whatever I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good. Sing it, you'll be right and understood.
Want you back, want you back.
I want you back for good. Unaware but underlined, I figured out the story.
No, no,
it wasn't good.
No, no.
But in a corner of my mind,
corner of my mind,
I celebrated glory.
That was not to be.
In the twist of separation, you excelled at being free. Can't you find a little room inside for me? Whatever I said, whatever I did, I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good.
Want you back, want you back.
See, I want you back for good. Sing it, you'll be right and understood.
Want you back, want you back.
I want you back, girl. the sun. It's time that you came back for good.